Today's show, we break down the championship game matchups. Could the SEC be left out? Could a 13-0 Florida State team be left out? Who is rooting harder in the game, the Big 12 or the Big 10 commissioner? And what's up with the edible mascot?
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I got to go, hon. Where are you going? It's Sunday night. We're going down to the airport. The Oklahoma offensive coordinator's showing up.
Ross Dellinger.
I think in this game specifically, more than any other this weekend, the margin of victory and how you look is probably the most important here for Florida State.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Everybody says Georgia is the clear number one team in the country. Can you go from number one to losing to Alabama in theoretically a competitive game to being out?
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Is this the real Pat Forty or is this the AI-generated Pat Forty? That's what I want to know. That's the number one question.
You'll never know. You'll never know.
We may never
he
know.
Looks what real. I like.
They're good with AI these days.
Yeah.
They can fool you. Is he a better picker of games? We drink Bush Light.
Yeah.
That's how we would know. It's like the sign that it's AI Pat Forty. All of a sudden he goes 6-0 this week on games.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll I could do a whole hour laughing about this, but I'm not going to.
Good idea.
I'm going to spare Pat or whoever you are. Robot Pat. Yeah. I probably, you know, if they AI'd me, I'd demand like a better headshot. Like, I look like George Clooney now. You know, better writing. All sorts of stuff I could do with the AI. I'm going to try it, see if anyone notices. Anyway, we have games, real games, not artificial intelligence games, not fake games. Real games, championship weekend. There are seven coming this weekend. All of them pretty exciting. Let's start. We can just talk about just the basics of the game, but what they mean, and then the playoff chase. But you got to always start championship weekend in Atlanta. SEC, number one Georgia, number eight Alabama. Georgia's 12-0, Bama's 11-1. Both are undefeated in SEC play. I don't know why I thought Alabama only won. I screwed up the other day and said they had won like 12 SEC games. They had not. They won a bunch of them. Massive play here, not just obviously with the playoff on the line and SEC championship on the line, but this is Nick Saban's shot at slowing. I'm not going to say derail, slowing, clawing back, boxing out the Frankenstein that he sent out into the world that landed in Athens. Georgia has won the last two titles. They're, what is it, 29 in a row now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They are the dominant team in college football. They are probably the dominant program in college football, a little distinction that us, you know, podcasters like to discuss because the offseason's long. Here it is, head to head. Alabama can say, not so fast, we ain't dead yet. Or Georgia can bury him here. And either way, I said the other day, going into this weekend, I don't think anybody is safe. No one is safe with a loss. And so you can do a lot of damage here. This isn't one of those, we're going to beat them, and then we may have to beat them again in a couple games. You can eliminate Georgia right here. So let's take it from that perspective. I'll start with the real Pat Forty.
Yeah, this is a fascinating game. Absolutely. And yes, Kirby Smart is on a faster track than Nick Saban was at the same stage in his life/career. Kirby, at age 47, two national championships. Saban hadn't won one until age 51. And he is in a place where, as long as he does not get bored, have a health issue, anything like that, you stay there, you just keep winning forever. So the Frankenstein is coming. It's really, it's fully grown. It's devouring whatever's in front of it. And right now, Alabama is in front of it. So I think Georgia's the better team. Alabama, I'm super impressed. Like I think we've talked about on the pod several times. This was one of Nick Saban's best coaching jobs. And we're talking about the greatest coach of all time. But to have this team the way it looked in September, 11-1 here, but they also should have lost to Auburn. Have, you know, been inconsistent at times offensively, sometimes very mediocre. So Georgia should win, but there's been times before these two have played. Georgia should have won. The similarities to 2021 are astounding. Alabama was life and death against a bad Auburn team to get to Atlanta with playoff hopes intact and needed a miracle win there. And everybody thought, well, Georgia's going to roll this team. And then Bryce Young just played out of his mind and they beat him. And then they had the rematch in the championship game. So we'll see if the similarities continue, if Alabama can pull the upset. And to Dan's point there, if they do, Georgia's probably out. So as much as I think none of us are really fans of what conference championship games have given us over the course of 20 years, this one could be both impactful, suspenseful, and a lot of fun.
Yeah, it does remind me of 2021 as well. I was going back and looking at the Alabama-Georgia series. And, I mean, every Alabama series is pretty lopsided the last 10 years, including this one. This is even more lopsided, though, than I thought. I didn't realize Alabama had won 7 straight against Georgia from 08 until 2022. Last year in the national title game, 2021. That was their first win over Alabama since 2007. I had kind of forgotten that. So it's been incredibly lopsided. Pat mentioned the 2021 game in Atlanta. There were a few other close ones. You guys remember the 2018, of course, overtime game in Atlanta. And then there was the 2018 or the 2017 game in Atlanta. Sorry, I'm getting all confused in the dates.
Well, because they put the playoffs January.
They put the January stuff. So you got remember the, of course, the championship game. The what is it? 2nd and 26.
Yep.
Overtime game in the semifinal, and then. Or in the championship, and then the SEC game and the SEC championship game in Atlanta, 35-28. It's been tight, and Alabama just seems to win the game pretty much every time outside of that national championship game 2 years ago. And it does. It feels like a 2021 all over again. And I go into this game thinking the same thing. Like, you know, I was at that Iron Bowl, and you watch that Alabama team, and you're thinking, this Alabama team surely is not going to be able to beat Georgia. But I thought the same in 21, and I thought the same a few times that they played over the last several years. And Nick Saban always seems to, or most of the time, come through. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a wild atmosphere there in Atlanta. I'm kind of excited to get there and see this thing, because you know, of a crazy championship weekend, I think we have 3 championship games that feature top 10 teams. You know, this is one that that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I'd go all the way back too to you can go further back, but 2012 SEC title game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That was Mark Richt's probably best team, and Alabama was at peak power, and they get they drive at the end of that game.
Yep.
I think they're at the 8 on the final seconds. This Georgia fan's having like PTSD flashbacks as I barely remember. But Aaron Murray threw a ball and got tipped, and I think it got caught by the receiver, maybe Chris Conley, and he was like stunned that it went to him, and then he got tackled and the clock ran out. And if it was just an incomplete, you get another chance. I mean, it was as close as you can lose. And I think until Kirby came along, you know, Mark Richt was going to build really good teams, but he wasn't necessarily equipped to build what Kirby was. And that was kind of the year, like, we've got everything here. you know, we're capable of winning this game. And instead, they just couldn't. I think that they had Todd Gurley on that team. I mean, that was a really good football team. They just couldn't get over. I love that Georgia, for all of its incredible success this year and the last 2 years, it's like, here's Alabama again. Still got, let's see if you can do it again.
I know.
One more time.
Georgia fans every day wake up saying, thank God for Kelee Ringo's pick six, because it broke the streak. Yeah. We'll see whether it can start a streak in Georgia's direction. But until that play, oh, there was a big Alabama gorilla on their backs.
Yeah, some non-competitive games in Athens, the whole bit. So Georgia's going to have to prove themselves one more time. We've talked about this a little the last show, but I think Georgia's got a hard path to get in with a loss. I think anybody has a hard path with a loss. And we said, I mean, it's, look, Michigan wins, Washington wins, FSU wins, Alabama wins, Texas wins, especially if they win impressively against Oklahoma State. Like, it's the reasonable move would be to say Alabama the SEC is not in this championship. And I know it's like everyone's going to flip out at the concept, but it would basically come down to you have to choose Alabama over a team that it defeated by 10 points. I mean, that was defeated by 10 points at home, or a 13-0 conference champion. We'll see if that plays out. But, like, could Alabama end this? For, like, can you guys, like, as this gets closer, can you see it possibly happening? Do you think they've got, so they got to make some kind of horrendous decision if that's the scenario? But this is the conference in the last 17 years, they've won 13 championships. And not FSU won one, Ohio State won one, and Clemson won two. That's it. 13. And in three of those 17 years, they had two teams in the finals. Can you have a national championship without the SEC?
I don't know, man. It is a heck of a decision. Horrendous, I think, was a good word for it, which is what they could be facing. You know, I can tell you this. Some of the talking points you would hear from people in the SEC and or people from Alabama in this situation, I think, would be, hey, we took on that Texas game. We played the Texas game. What did Michigan do in the non-conference? And say, yeah, they ducked Power 5 games. They dropped Power 5 games. So now the record is the record.
Yeah, but you'd be then going Alabama over an undefeated Michigan?
Yeah. I mean, that, look, this is the argument that people are going to try to make. Whether it's that, whether it's...
Yeah, I mean, your win over Georgia is better than the win.
Over
would Alabama
State.
Have better wins than Michigan? I mean, this is an uphill climb, baby. I mean,
oh, it is.
But I get it. Desperate times.
Yeah. Beating Georgia would be the best win anybody had, period. You also would have a 10-point loss at home.
Yeah. And then you'd have, they also beat Ole Miss, LSU, and Tennessee. Yep.
Tennessee.
Michigan would be unbeaten with victories over Ohio State and Penn State. Shrapnel. I mean, they're not 13-0 Michigan's getting in the playoff. But this is where we're at.
Yeah. This is not the one to argue.
It's a good point. I hadn't even thought of that one.
The one to argue would be Florida State, right? The one
Florida
to argue
State
over,
without their quarterback. Without their quarterback.
And, I mean, their schedule, right? It looked like it was going to be good about early in the season, some of these wins, but they just, obviously, these teams tailed off. Like Clemson and LSU both, you know, those wins don't look probably as good as they did. But Florida State is certainly the one that you'd make that argument.
And you both beat LSU.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. Florida State on a, quote, you know, neutral field.
Neutral field by 21,
by
Alabama by 14, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At home.
Yeah.
At home.
Yeah.
And then you're saying we beat all these other teams that are a little better, and you don't have a win like Georgia. But you didn't lose.
The two things Alabama would have to say is, A, we are the SEC champion, and the SEC always wins this thing. And it's not a legitimate championship if the SEC isn't in it. And B, we took on a tough non-conference game against a good team.
So did Florida State.
Right. Florida State did and won it impressively, but not the same team without Jordan Travis.
I cannot sit there and say this is a legitimate national championship without the tournament, without the SEC champion in it, when there's this quality of SEC champ. Obviously, if both teams had two losses or something like that was going in. Not been a banner year for the SEC. The middle of the SEC is nowhere near what it used to be. These teams aren't as good. It has more depth than the Big Ten.
Yeah.
But
shrapnel, as you put it.
Better than that, but not much. I was watching the Big Ten Network. They do the little 60-minute games where they just play which is an interesting. You get a lot of Gus. Right, a lot of Gus. Yeah. It's just
you get a lot of Gus. You don't get a lot of sideline shots. Trust me, went back and looked at a few from 2021 and 2022, looking for a Mr. Connor Stallions. A few weeks ago.
The 60-minute game ain't gonna get you a lot of. No, you don't have to do the band. You don't have to do all that. But the replay reviews take like 3 seconds. It's great. So I was watching the Michigan-Ohio State game and ended, and then I think Northwestern Illinois, 60-minute job came on, and I was like, oh wow, this is I was watching high school football the other day, Michigan State high school football. They had Division V and then Division I, and it's like, oh, this is a whole different. This is not really the same sport, right? you have the smaller schools, and then you're like, oh, look at this. That was kind of like watching going from Ohio State, Michigan to Northwestern Illinois. You're like, is this the same league? Where's the fast guys? Why do they have their cornerbacks playing offensive line? I don't understand. Anyway,
where's the fast?
Ross, what will the South rise up? And are we staring at a potential civil war? Should we alert Homeland Security? I don't think people are taking. I think we're missing the signs here.
Well,
this could happen.
There's two situations here too. You're not only leaving out the SEC that, as you mentioned, has won 13 of the last 17 national titles, but you're leaving out a team that, up until in our scenario this weekend, has won 29 straight games in the last two national championships. So it'd be pretty remarkable. And I had somebody ask me recently, kind of somewhat new to the college sports industry, they asked me, why in the heck did the Power Five, emphasis on five, commissioners agree, whatever it was, 10-12 years ago, to a 4-team playoff? And we're starting to see that
bowls.
Yeah, that
bowl
that you know bowl this year of all year, right, is where you could probably should have more than four, because you have maybe a worthy team from each of the five, which we haven't seen every year, but we're seeing it this year for sure.
Yeah, the the point there that Ross is making to not just what Georgia has done in total over the last 2 years, but what Georgia is this year. Everybody says Georgia is the clear number one team in the country. Can you go from number one to losing to Alabama in theoretically a competitive game to being out? Maybe you can, but that's what, I mean, for
that's
once.
That's regular season in football, right? Or sports. Right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The committee is going to earn its cream corn for once.
Mm-hmm.
The reason they did four is because the people designing the playoff didn't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were hung up on things like the Rose Bowl. We need the sunset of the Rose Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And we need this. And it was utterly ridiculous. Sankey and Swarbrick and those guys got together and said, all right, let's design a playoff. Remember, they were like, it's going to take 2 years. And they figured it out in 3 meetings. And I think the third one, they just got drunk and I don't know if they did anything. No, just build it. I mean, it's not that hard. We're going to figure out a playoff. Every single sports event on earth has a playoff. Not really walking on the moon here. And they figured it out, and they're like, oh, okay. So it's like a reason, because they're like, we want to design a playoff. Let's see what we can come up with. And they pretty much solved it. I mean, the obvious thing that they should have done, even if they didn't want a playoff, like there was people kicking and screaming, and it's like them trying to come up with guardrails for NIL. They just won't wake up to the new reality of the day. So they're trying to solve 30-year-old problems. Like, we must make sure the Rose Bowl kicks off at 5 o'clock. It was six. There's six New Year's Day bowls, right?
Right.
You know, so six teams. You could just do that. But you could just have the first two as a bye and then just play your quarters, and then you get to your semis, and you extend it out. So then you'd have, what, eight? It'd be eight games. Is that right? Four.
It was six teams. It'd be five.
I don't know. Right? Whatever it was. The solution was six, and everyone was like, do six. If you don't want to do it, do six. Everybody gets in. Your conference championship games will automatically have this like massive amount of what we're getting this weekend. Totals, but they didn't do it. So it hasn't bit them. That's the thing. They probably were right. It didn't matter, but here we are, and it could matter.
Yeah, the last one could be the stickiest one for sure.
I would say this.
Yeah, Jim Delaney was dragged kicking and screaming.
Well, this might be Jim Delaney's last like kick in the shin. He's going to be fired up. He's sitting there on his TV bonus bemoaning the players are making any money, but he's going to get the last laugh on the SEC if they don't get in because he refused to do a playoff. It's good. Could be a really enjoyable weekend for Jim Delaney as the SEC gets out because he wouldn't do it right. Mike's live was all in for like, let's just do this thing right.
Yep.
But he couldn't. He had to make compromises. So anyway, I don't know. So look out. Ain't my fault. All right. Friday night, Vegas, Oregon, Washington. The last Pac-12 game is one of the most anticipated and exciting ever. Certainly in a long time. I hardly even remember any like really epic USC games back in the day. They'd have a few games, but it was more like they played Notre Dame or it would be something else. I can't remember it. I was trying to think of a Pac-12 game that I was this excited for. And so here we are. They'll probably be chanting Big Ten at the end. Pat, did you say George Klyavkov's going to go to the game? I think you reported he hadn't been to a single football game all year.
I talked to a couple people. They are 99% sure
that the George Pac-12 commissioner.
The Pac-12 commissioner has not attended a Pac-12 game.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, he's expected to be there for this one.
Yeah,
to hand over the last trophy. If he still exists. He is believed to still exist.
Yes.
Right? I mean, Ross has probably seen him at some of these. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Ross has seen him at the CFP.
Doesn't
meetings,
he have like a ranch in Montana? He just goes up there.
He does. Mm-hmm.
I applaud that buyout life before there's even a buyout.
Yeah, right.
Like this thing's shutting down. I can either get paid and go to work or I get paid and not go to work. Mama didn't raise a fool. Mrs. Klyavkov was no idiot. Good on you, George. I wouldn't
give me my fly fishing rod, my snowshoes. I'm out of here.
I mean, it's, you know what? It's a little chilly in Montana right now. Get down to Vegas for some warmth. Get that Larry Scott suite at the Cosmopolitan, Rain Man suite. I mean, what an epic weekend on the. Quick aside, the UFC was about to get sold to WME Endeavor for like $4 billion, and they had this final fight in Vegas. We're in Vegas, and the employees of the UFC just went the expense account beating. So like we're all getting laid off and the company's apparently worth $4 billion. You think I give a yes, we're going to Kraft Steak. What are they gonna do about it? That's got to be the Pac-12 this weekend.
I can't imagine that I remember last year I covered the game last year and the Pac-12 employees were going hard at the casino bar after that. This is going to put that to shame.
It better. If you're in Vegas this weekend, you see someone with a Pac-12 logo, get near them.
Yeah. They're buying. Right. Yeah.
As for the game, Heisman on the line potentially. not just potentially, probably. I know LSU's waging a war for my man Jaden Daniels, who I've loved all season. I was early. I was preseason Jaden Daniels. Got that one right. But obviously, Knicks or Penix can win this thing. Classic game earlier in the season. Playoff bid on the line. I feel like Oregon wins, they get in, but there's probably a scenario they don't. I don't know how Oregon would match up with Alabama. Washington obviously won the first one, but they're 9.5-point dogs. Ross, your thoughts on Ducks Huskies?
Yeah, I was at the first one in Seattle. It was probably the most exciting game I saw all year. Just a lot of fun. Washington kind of dominated the first half. Oregon came back, dominated the second half, and then kind of fell apart there in the final few minutes, partly because of the arm of Michael Penix, who marched Washington down the field after that failed fourth down. It's kind of a retribution type of game, I guess, for Dan Lanning in Oregon for a number of reasons. Remember, he went for that fourth down and didn't get it around, I don't know, it was around midfield maybe, and then Penix, it was probably, Pat, do you remember where it was? It was, I mean, they are Washington.
It was in the, it was all, just past the 50, it was in the, no in man's the 40, land, in the 40 sort of, somewhere, yeah. Kind of, yeah, like maybe yeah, 47 and, or something.
I think Penix took like maybe two plays, two or three passes to get down the field. Yeah. Yeah, it was incredible to watch. So a little bit of a revenge game for them, you know, and then for the Huskies, obviously, win and you're in. And so that should be motivation enough, I would think.
Yeah, it's a fantastic matchup. And I was there with Ross that first game. It was a great game, great scene, drama, controversy in terms of coaching decisions, the whole deal. And these programs have been outstanding all year. I mean, they have had great, great seasons. The winner should absolutely be in, I think. I think even if Oregon wins in another classic game, Washington may have an argument to get in, too. We'll see. There's still so many scenarios in play here. But I think we do have to remember how good the Pac-12 was this year and was all season and was in the non-conference play and not just, you know, automatically say, well, there's no way Washington can't get in if they're on the losing end of 33-30, which I think was the score of the first game. The Heisman thing is really interesting. Like Bo Nix's numbers are just spectacular, but Jaden Daniels' numbers are better, and Michael Penix has been phenomenal. His numbers have tailed off a bit, but this is, I think, all three of them are still in play there. And the wild thing about Nix, I was at like a Thursday night Louisville, Virginia game, and there were a bunch of NFL scouts there. And I was talking to one of them that I knew and said, where are you going for Saturday? And he said, I'm going out to Eugene to see if this Bo Nix thing is real. He said, I saw the guy play at Auburn. I can't believe this is the same guy. Just how better he has gotten, whether it's offense or whether it's himself growing, probably both. But it's been pretty cool to see Bo Nix's college career go from a guy who kind of took a beating from the fans at Auburn to a guy who may win the Heisman Trophy.
Evil transfer portal. Yeah, terrible. Ruining the game.
Yeah.
He really has improved. This is going to be excellent. I'm hoping for a shootout. When we get a Heisman moment. I always love when people declare the Heisman moment. It's like something Jim Nance would come up with at Augusta National. The piano. I believe that was his Heisman moment. Now you can win it. You eluded a third down rush, threw it across your body. I don't know. This is going to be great. I mean, that's an awesome Friday night. I will say this, too. This is the setup for the first round of the playoff. Next year is going to have a Friday night game.
Yeah.
And then there'll be the three on Saturday. I imagine that Friday night game and the Saturday night game will have to be Southern-based. Or I would highly recommend it. I would highly recommend playing if a Big Ten, someone in the Midwest or North is hosting a game at the playoff, they're playing at noon. Because you don't want 8 o'clock kick in like Madison. Try to play it early. So might be the thing. But this will be the kicker to the kickoff to an awesome, awesome football weekend. All right. Here's three where it's what favorites got to win or they're out. Let me know if you think there's any issues. We'll start with the most intriguing or the closest. Florida State, just 2.5 favorite in ACC championship game against Louisville. It's coming off their loss to Kentucky. Pat, can they do it? Can the Seminoles do it again with Rodemaker at quarterback and throw this whole playoff debate into it's going to be a scream fest.
Yeah, they can certainly. I don't know that they will. You know, I went back and looked at the numbers. I mean, their offense was, it was rough against Florida. They, you know, they came back and won the game. Rivalry game, you're down 12-0. Give them credit for that, but man, it was a labor. They had 224 yards of total offense, by far their lowest total of the season, 3.93 yards per play. Couldn't really run it, couldn't throw it, and so I think there is reason to express doubt about that team again this week. You know, maybe you can beat Louisville. Here's the thing with Louisville. First of all, you give Jeff Brohm an underdog role, look out, because he's won a lot of games in an upset capacity. Secondly, this Louisville team, they're 10-0 when they turn it over two or fewer times. They're 0-2 when they turn it over three or more. That's basically their thing. If they take care of the ball, they're pretty good. They're solid on both sides of the ball. Their defense has gotten worse the last 3 weeks, but I don't know whether Florida State has the personnel now to take advantage of it. That's the question. So Louisville could make things easier for the committee if they beat FSU, and I think that they can. But if they don't, then, yeah, Florida State becomes a huge flashpoint in terms of the team that's going into the playoff and how do they look.
Yeah, how you look in this game is really important. I mean, there's several of these championship games, right, that some teams probably don't just want to win, right, but they want to win pretty convincingly in case there is some kind of jockeying for a final spot. I think that's the case with Texas, you know, in playing Oklahoma State. I'm sure they want to win pretty convincingly. If Oregon, I'm sure would want to win as big as possible, and the same thing for Florida State, because it could be those, right, those teams coming down to one or two spots in the playoff. And Florida State is right there. After you lose your starting quarterback and then you play such a tight, kind of sloppy game, even though it's at a rival's place and you're down your starting quarterback, obviously, I think you want to show that you're still somewhat dominant just in case the nightmare scenario happens for Florida State, which is, you know, Oregon thumps Washington, Texas wins big, you know, and then all of a sudden the committee's got this decision to make, or even Alabama wins.
Bama wins big.
The committee, yeah, the committee's got this decision to make whether to leave out an undefeated ACC champion. Again, be shocked if that happens, but I think in this game specifically, more than any other this weekend, the margin of victory and how you look is probably the most important here for Florida State.
So we asked earlier, could you possibly have a playoff without a FCC team? Could you possibly have a playoff without a 13-0, quote-unquote, Power 5 conference champ? We've had other 13-0 teams, but it's like UCF and stuff like that. I mean, you know, whatever. Liberty could go 13-0 or something. Some others can do it here. Yeah. Could it happen, Ross?
I don't think so. I mean, I guess there is the scenario, right, where Alabama wins big over Georgia and then Oregon wins big over Washington and Texas thumps Oklahoma State, and all of a sudden, you know, and Florida State doesn't look good, right, and wins at the end of the game in some sloppy fashion. That would be the scenario where there's the highest probability that it could happen. I still think in that scenario, it doesn't happen. In that scenario, I just think Florida State's probably like the 4 seed or something. But I think they get in. The system is set up for a undefeated Power 5 champion to advance, you know, plain and simple.
It is, yeah. But, of course, that's where the math in this whole thing was wrong to begin with, as we just talked about, where in theory you could have 5 of those, and there's 4 spots. And this one, you know, I do think that it would go so against protocol and precedent and the way these committee members are wired to think, which is undefeated conference champion goes to playoff. But the other part of the equation is, you know, what gives you the best playoff? Well, who are the best teams? And would Florida State still be one of those teams? That's where the argument will be. The rubber will hit the road if it comes down to that. So, you know, if the committee is looking for ways to make its job easier, they would not cry a river to see Louisville beat Florida State. And then you don't have to worry about that. And the basketball precedent has always been you have to select and seed the team that will be in the tournament, not the team that played up to that point if you have a key injury. But that's a lot easier to handle in a 68-team field than a 14 field, obviously.
Yeah, we are one incredible drive by Dylan Gabriel for Oklahoma at the Red River Shootout from having potentially five undefeated teams.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so close. It is amazing it took 10 years for them to really get this to occur. My thing is that the people who are college administrators, the people that would be on a playoff committee are going to say, well, we can't. We're only going to if you wanted to get in, you had to win all your games. Alabama and Georgia you can point to something and say, this is why you're not in. You can't really do that to Florida State. And they can't do that to the kids. Like, that's their mentality. That's my thought process.
Yeah.
And so they say, hey, look, Alabama, you wanted to get in, you should have won all your games. Georgia shouldn't have lost to Alabama. Alabama shouldn't have lost to Texas. So I think FSU is in, but I get the argument. Like, there's no good way. This is square peg round hole time. All right. Any chance the Stillwater Mullet gets Texas and enacts the revenge? I don't think there's anyone better to ride justice seeking out on the plains for the Big 12 than Mike Gundy. Any chance, briefly, we don't spend a million times on this. Texas is a better team, but that doesn't mean anything once a whistle blows.
Look, if Jeff Brohm likes an upset scenario, so does the mullet. Mike Gundy loves this sort of give me that warlock mojo game. You know, I'll come in there and throw some stuff at you. He's won a lot of upset games in his career, and this is a chance here. And there have been times they have played very well at times. Now they've laid two of the biggest eggs of any team in the country. So. And their defense is not very good statistically. I mean, Texas should be able to exploit the defense, and Texas defense is outstanding. So I don't see it happening, but this is one, the longer it's close, the more tight Texas is going to get.
I don't know that any other Big 12 program was angrier than Oklahoma State about the realignment with Oklahoma and Texas leaving. I mean, they were all angry, but Oklahoma State made it pretty public. Their president, their athletic director, and of course Mike Gundy, the football coach, in specifically Oklahoma leaving, obviously their chief rival, and they've kind of torched the series between the two programs, Bedlam. But they know, just like I think most people know, that Texas kind of started all this, right? That they were the one that really opened the door and walked through it, and Oklahoma followed behind, I think, in a lot of aspects. So, man, this is like, what kind of sweet revenge would this be for Mike Gundy in Oklahoma State to ruin Texas's chances to at a championship in the last season of the current form of the Big 12, and also a chance to disrupt any playoff possibility for Texas. It's juicy, it's great, and I think it's going to be a battle. I don't necessarily see some big blowout here. I'm excited for this one, and I'm also somewhat excited to. And we talked about this in the pod, I think, last time, to potentially watch a commissioner hand over a championship trophy if Texas does win to a team, you know, leaving the conference.
So which commissioner is rooting harder for their team? Brett Yormark rooting for Oklahoma State to beat Texas, or Tony Petitti rooting for Iowa to beat Michigan?
The latter, period. No contest. Yormark, first of all, is a business is business guy. He's like, okay, fine, I can handle this, I can get through this, you know, blah, 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 blah. But Petitti specifically battled with Michigan over Jim Harbaugh. And like the booing of Tony Petitti when he's on that podium, assuming he's giving the trophy to Michigan, is going to be like nothing we've ever heard before, I would bet, at a conference championship game.
I'd expect him. He's going to be the one. I think that I don't think he's going to back down from it. I expect he's going to be the one to hand over the trophy and not give it to some associate. I don't know that I'd expect him to talk a lot, but because that could go poorly, I think, in front of the Michigan fans.
You got to embrace it. Gary Bettman gets booed every time.
You can't escape it.
He's got to embrace it. Like, you got to just be like, you got to kill him with kindness. You just got to take it. You just got to take it. I mean, this is what being the commissioner is.
Yeah.
I mean, he made a decision, right? He made a hard decision, and he made the decision that he and the 13 guys on the conference call, or 12, I don't know if Ferentz was ever on the call.
Couldn't agree. Get the numbers to work.
Yeah, he did it. This is you got to stand there and be like, yeah, suspended the guy. Now he's champ. Here you go. I mean, Goodell gets booed. Bettman gets booed. I don't know if Adam Silver gets booed or whatever, but I mean, that's just part of the game. So I'm sure not a fun thing, but I'm almost ready. Like, you know, you see these, you saw them over the weekend, like Auburn fan reacts to last play and they're like smashing their TV at the end. Like the little videos come out. My dad lost it when 4th and 31 happened, or Ohio State fan reacts to final pick and they're like taking a sledgehammer to their house. That could happen up in the booth in like Lucas Oil or somewhere else. You know, we could have one of those good TikToks of or down at, is the game in Arlington? Arlington?
Mm-hmm.
I want to see a commissioner rip the TV off the wall and throw it. I think that'd be fun. Come on, Iowa.
Let me throw out one completely ridiculous scenario, though.
Okay.
For the Big Ten. First of all, I've been on record. I don't even think Iowa crosses midfield unless Michigan turns over the ball. So it's not going to be close. But what if the Cooper DeJean invalid fair catch signal had not been called? He returns that punt against Minnesota and they're 11-1 and they go in and beat Michigan. What if the worst offense in the country finishes 12-1? Would we actually have to talk about them as a playoff team?
We would, but that blowout loss at Penn State, I think, would.
Yeah. That's tough to overcome, right? That would be the worst loss
this year. Last year,
of probably anybody.
Yeah, right.
That would be the worst loss of anybody.
Oh, that'd Texas, be awesome. Like, imagine
State, or Oregon.
Imagine Iowa versus Georgia and like Florida State again. Like, you just like, oh God, just call me for the title game. Yeah. I don't know. All right. We'll get to the other games when we pick them in the race of the case later this week. A few other items to go through. Mike Elko is the coach at A&M. Pat, thoughts?
Good hire. Took a while to end up there. You know, I don't think anybody's a slam dunk there. We've seen that. You hire Jimbo Fisher, he busts out, so there's no guarantee. But the way it went down was pretty fascinating. We covered a lot of it on the Sunday pod about Stoops being the guy and then basically having the offer rescinded. And he's, you know, I think tried to gild the lily a little bit with how it went down, which is understandable when you're the guy that's got left and now you've got to go back to your other job. Elko immediately became the guy. Discussions back and forth. They look like it's going to happen. And then, Elko had not fully committed. It was enough that A&M sent the plane to Durham, Raleigh, Durham, wherever it goes, and had to leave it idling for 90 minutes before Elko committed and got to the airport and got on the plane and showed up down in Aggieland at, I think it was 2-something a.m. Monday morning. So, he's a solid, solid coach. He's done great work at a tough place. He knows A&M. He can recruit. He can scheme. He can do all those things. Needs to bring a high-powered offense to the table, and we'll see if that happens. But, you know, if you're A&M and you're sitting there thinking we got to get a coach with a national championship on his resume, I think the fans have come around and are like, yeah, this is a good hire. Let's go.
Yeah, as much pushback as the Mark Stoops stuff got, this one's getting embraced, it seems like, by most everyone, which is weird because, I don't know, I mean, some people might say that they're fairly similar, but for whatever reason, right, this one is kind of being embraced a little. Years from now, maybe, whatever, this search will be one to look back on and see if you could dig up exactly how this went down. You know, it always, you know, one of the first names in this search was Elko and Jeff Traylor. Those guys were guys that I think a lot of powerful people at A&M wanted and were interested in and knew. But then the search kind of went to other people, it seems like Mark Stoops and Kyle Whittingham at Utah and maybe Kalen DeBoer and some others. And I don't know if that was a attempt to make more of a kind of a splashy type deal and grab a more experienced, long tenured coach or what. But then it circled back, you know, to the original, seemed like it circled back to the original candidates. And like Pat said, yeah, I don't think the Elko deal was in print until around like 11 p.m. or so that night when he got on the plane. The plane was sitting there. I think it would be shocking, right, if Elko – I don't think anybody expected him to turn down that job. I mean, that would have been crazy. But I think he's the type of guy that, right, he wanted a little time to at least – think about it and talk to his family and talk to his staff and all that stuff. So it kind of dragged on a little longer than some A&M folks had liked. But yeah, it was quite the search, but it ends kind of with the candidate that a lot of people thought made the most sense.
College job searches are hysterical. Like, you must make this life altering change in two seconds.
Yeah.
Like, hey man, give me 90 minutes here. Talk to my wife. I don't know. No problem being second, third. I mean, like that stuff gets forgotten, and there's nothing dumber than caring about winning the press conference. Pete Carroll was like the sixth choice.
Yeah.
Something like, I mean, it just doesn't matter. It just, so this could be the right guy. The next guy could have been the right guy. It doesn't matter. Who had a better coach celebration? Okay. Was it A&M, who at the Elko press conference linked arms? They got all these boosters link arms and do some kind of whack
very
job.
Texas A&M.
Midnight yell. I don't know what it is. Oh, I feel like I'm committing blasphemy by even making fun
and
of it.
Lane just made fun of it on Twitter.
He did. Yeah, Lane did. So I'll blame it on Lane. I don't know what they were doing, but it's really weird to see like 60-year-old men do it at a press conference. It's like, okay,
they do it in their stadium after like the third quarter, and the whole stadium literally shakes. It sways. It is unnerving to be in the press box when they
I don't
do
understand
that.
This. Like the like, do you really feel that big of a connection to the other people that went to your school?
It's an odd.
A lot of those people probably didn't go to the school.
They didn't even go to the school too, right? It's not like the long gray line of Army. Right. Okay, that I get.
They kind of
all
think
went
it is
to
like
West
that,
Point.
Though.
The school has 50. They pretty much let everybody in. It's like the acceptance rates are like pretty much everybody gets in. Not that hard to go there. Like you didn't survive West Point. Now I'm gonna let this guy's class of 17. This is my brother. Like, guy could be suing you next week in court. Or like, you know, crap. I don't.
Aggies don't sue Aggies, Dan.
Hell yeah,
that's right.
Hell yeah, they do. Anyway, I don't know what that was. Or Mississippi State AD Zach Selman getting carried on the shoulders of players and maybe fans at the Starkville Airport, which what has like half a runway? How big is that thing?
Mm-hmm. Very tiny.
Hiring Jeff Lebby.
Dan, a few words for you. It just means more.
It doesn't.
Okay.
Doesn't mean more than the Big Ten. Not this year. Michigan State, it meant all sorts of chaos. They just had a nice, we'll just hire the guy. He shows up with his family. They got a car there for him. We're going to go over and have a proper press conference.
I know Mississippi State fans are thrilled by this, obviously, are thrilled by this hire and excitement, offense and some of that worked under a lot of great offensive minds. But if you didn't know much about Jeff Lebby's background and you just saw the reaction of the athletic director getting carried by players on the shoulders when he landed and probably five, maybe at least 300 people showing up at a hangar in Starkville on a Sunday night to welcome in a coach. If you wouldn't know anything about Jeff Lebby and you saw all that, you really would think that he has multiple national championships, that he has won. Yeah. Like they hired an Urban Meyer. It is wild. And I think it probably does show a few things. Number one, there's just isn't a lot, and I should know, going on in central Mississippi, okay? And there's one thing that those people care about pretty much above anything else, and it's college football. And they have been, you know, devoid a little bit over the last several years, but especially the last year of exciting football. This year has been really disappointing for them, I think, and specifically offensively. You know, after you have Mike Leach and Dan Mullen, you have all these fun, creative offenses. You're scoring a lot of points. Maybe not winning all your games, but you're scoring a lot of points, and you're winning, you know, 6, 7, 8 games a year. To go from all that into what they went through this last season, I think all that frustration kind of came out, and we saw it.
Yeah, if I have to choose which one like startled me more, I would go with Starkville, just because I've never seen an AD get carried off of anything. So
it's like Rudy.
yeah.
I mean, and that,
I love it.
I hope it's not the case for those folks, but that really might be the high point for Zach Selman and for Jeff Lebby. You know, like that moment you get off the plane and there are all these people and you're getting carried on shoulders. It's like, man, woo,
they were
rush.
Like number one in the country and they didn't carry their AD off the, like, I mean, they won the baseball national championship. It was like, I got to go, hon. Where are you going? It's Sunday night. We're going down to the airport.
Yeah.
Oklahoma offensive coordinator showing up. Like,
the Dogs got a new coach.
We're going to score some points.
Like you said, it's not Nick Saban coming back from the Dolphins. It's like we got the OC from Oklahoma.
That's wild. All right. I know. So I got a text from a former college administrator after he saw, I think he saw the Zach Selman, the Mississippi State AD, the video of him getting carried on the shoulders. And the text was, this is one of the strangest things I've ever seen in college athletics. And college athletics is one of the strangest industries out there. Like, yeah, that's about right.
Straight up makes no sense. Did Greg Byrne get carried around down there? Did Scott Strickland get carried around?
I don't think so.
Curry, any of these guys. What's up with these guys? Total failures. Couldn't even get carried around the Starkville Airport. Maybe the bus station or something. Fantastic entry. All right. Quickly, transfer portal is opened. There's bemoaning.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Dorian at NC State's asking like 5,000 fans to give him $1,000 to keep the players. I mean, at least he's got a plan. I see way more coaches embracing this now. No more. We don't like doing it. It's like, this is what we got to do, which is what you should have been doing 2 years ago.
William Christopher. I wonder if he's going to get dabble in the portal.
William Christopher going to get somebody. Everyone's screaming. It does seem overwhelming. Like 1,000 guys will get some of these guys won't find a place. Oh, well, tough break. You're adults. Make a bad decision. A lot of them are getting kicked out. Thoughts on this week's of bemoanment that the end of the world is happening?
No, we're off to a brisk start, and it's going to be brisker probably next week. So a lot is going on. The quarterbacks get the big attention and should. We had Will Rogers from Mississippi State go in the portal. We had Sorsby from Indiana, who finished the season well, go in the portal. So, and that, yeah, this is basically, it's a free market and it's a fast market. You're going to see what you're worth. You're going to see who's going to give it to you, where you're going to go. Take a look at the depth chart on your way. Maybe see if you fit the offense or not. But this is speed dating with a considerable amount of money and high stakes on the line here. It's very interesting evolution of the sport.
We just spent 20 minutes talking about this happening with the coaches. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who's going to carry Will Rogers off the plane?
Somebody might.
Yeah.
Somebody
might. There's been some splat. I think Pat mentioned Will Howard, the Kansas State starter, and Kyler Van Dyke, the Miami starter, in the portal. So a lot of power five starting quarterbacks looking for a new home. I saw where I think Cam Ward, the Washington State quarterback, I don't think that he's in the portal, at least not yet, maybe, but I think a local report there, and I can't confirm this or I haven't vetted it in any way. So, but there was a local outlet that said that he was offered, had multiple offers from multiple schools for $1 million basically to transfer out. So given Washington State's situation, you would think it's going to be hard to hang on to him. So you're going to see a lot of that, right? That's what I'm following more so is these players who could make a real impact on a football team, which is at quarterback. You know, I know we might have some big running backs out there, receivers, defensive end. But there are two positions I feel like that can really impact a football team. One is obvious, right? Quarterback. The other is not so obvious. I think offensive line. And that's been a very difficult position for a lot of teams. You just look at Ohio State, Clemson, even Alabama, right? The kind of perennial powers the last few years that have struggled at times this year, there have been offensive line issues, and it's hard to get linemen out of the portal. It's one of the positions they're just not a ton of there. So those two positions are kind of what to watch this portal cycle, I think.
It will be a bidding war. Michigan and Notre Dame probably need a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Among others. And I would think there'd be substantial possibilities there. Both pretty good situations, Joey. And obviously, there's a lot of rebuilding SEC teams, different things. So, yeah, it is what it is. It's okay. Listen to the crying. It'll all work out. Sports dying. We just had like 1,000 guys show up in an airport in the middle of the night in Starkville to carry the AD around.
We had 10 million people watch Colorado play Colorado State at 2 in the morning.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Colorado's on the they're fleeing.
Yeah.
We'll see how it all works out in the end. I will not overreact to a few guys leaving Colorado either, but there's been decommitments, people leaving. Coach Prime's momentum has stalled a little bit. He better be not hard to find in this portal, or year two may not be a whole lot better than year one.
Yeah. Yeah. The season kind of got away from him on the field, and now he has to make sure the roster and the coaching staff don't get away from him off it.
Yeah. Not going so well there. All right. Finally, we have our first bowl game with potential cannibalism. Bowl industry is treading dangerous ground here. The Pop-Tart Bowl, the Pop-Tarts Bowl, not Pop-Tart. See, who only has one Pop-Tart, right? It comes in pack of two, so it's the Pop-Tarts. They have a mascot. The Pop-Tart mascot will be at the game. And apparently, I'm not sure how this is working out, but the costume, I assume it's a costume, not a real person. Maybe it's an AI-generated a Pop-Tart. I don't know what this thing is. The costume will be edible. So at the end of the game, the winning team will be allowed to either gnaw on the mascot or break off parts of the mascot
and bite me
and enjoy a Pop-Tart. Now,
the mascot will be devoured on the field.
They said that it will not include anybody, any human eating, but you've seen these celebrations. These guys get wild.
Thank God they had to clarify that. There won't be any flesh and blood involved here.
Yeah, we hope. God. We hope.
seems like the marketing department has lost its marbles, and there's like the legal team is like, wait a minute, what are we doing?
Look, when you are flush with the thrill of victory in a game as prestigious, as august, as tradition steeped as the Pop-Tarts Bowl, you could go a little overboard after the game and decide to actually eat the human in the mask, in the costume. So I'm glad they put that out there. Guardrails. We have guardrails on the Pop-Tart eating at the Pop-Tarts Bowl.
Yes. We have Nicole Arbach was all over this story for The Athletic. Got a comment from the VP of marketing at Pop-Tarts. During the grand entrance and for the entirety of the game, there'll be a traditional mascot costume made of fabric and other non-edible materials that a person will wear. The edible mascot will only be revealed after the game ends. Have no fears. Have no fear. No humans will be harmed in the enjoyment of Pop-Tart's edible mascot. You can't guarantee that, Sarah. You just can't. This is someone who is just dipping their toe into college football. Yeah. She probably went to like Boston College or something. Like maybe she went to New England United. She doesn't really know what could happen.
This reminds me of the Seinfeld episode with John Voight, where John Voight bites Kramer's arm, and people are just leaving teeth marks. Can you imagine the mascot having just teeth marks all over his arm from football players?
Sarah went to Duke. I'm looking up her LinkedIn. She went to Duke. You don't know. You don't know.
Cameron Indoor, there might have been a few bitings, but this is football, and it's a little more serious.
These guys get hungry. They've been playing. They want to start. We don't know. We're hoping no human gets, I guess. I don't have no fear. Do you kind of want? Maybe, I don't know. This is exciting. I'll be watching the end of the Pop-Tarts Bowl. Got me.
Hey, you know what? Savvy marketing. People will watch the end of that game.
Yep.
It's better than the mayo dump, right? They top the mayo. Mayo's sitting there going, duh! Gotta be innovative. Gotta be aggressive. This is Ryan Day. He just lost. Be more aggressive on fourth down, Mayo Bowl. Duke's Mayo Bowl. All right. That's our show. We'll be back with the race for the case. More discussions, more hirings, more transfer, more chaos. Who the hell knows? All coming on later this week. We appreciate everybody listening. Hope you have a terrific midweek here. Keep subscribing, telling your friends about us, sharing us on social media, and we will talk to you later.